Business Lunch on WGN. Hi, it's Sean Williams. Pete Zimmerman's your producer, and we'll go all the way till 1 o'clock. And I'd want to show after that. I think we've got a lot of good information for you, including, look at that, Serena Williams is investing in a Chicago startup. We'll catch up with that story in a little bit. Right now, Elise Link joins us, as she always does on Mondays. We'll talk real estate, and we'll talk about how the economy is doing generally. Hi, Elise, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Pretty good. Let's start with the stimulus check scam. What do you know about this? This is news to me.
Well, it's interesting. There are a whole variety of scams that are going on right now. We've got vaccine scams. We've got COVID scams. We've got scams for unemployment. We can talk about those, too. And then this brand new one this morning pops up. Text messages promising $1,200 in stimulus checks are actually scams, according to the IRS.
I guess the key is not to click through, right? If you get that email, you haven't been compromised, but it's when you open up an attachment, right?
Well, what they're asking you to do is to click here to accept the payment, and then that allows, they actually will ask you for your bank account information, and of course, you definitely don't want to do that. And people think that because it's a text and not an email, maybe that the IRS is actually sending them information directly, but of course, the IRS does not ever send these kinds of unsolicited texts or emails. They will only contact you by mail.
I understand how people get confused, though. I mean, it's not been a streamlined or efficient process, any of this, and it's been confusing to us all. You know, sometimes we roll our eyes when people give money to the Nigerian prince, but I think there's a broad population that's vulnerable to this.
There are, especially people who are very desperate and are at their wits' ends and they're looking for any sort of lifeline whatsoever. Also, we're hearing news today about a bipartisan group from Congress that is going to release a COVID relief bill because there's just, you know, obviously so much pressure. And so people may hear that and then they get this text and they think, oh, those two things are related because they're happening right at the same time.
10 days away from Christmas Eve. How would you bet on do we get relief before Christmas?
I hate to bet on this, John, because I really hope
that's what we do now. We're in Illinois, and we wager.
Is what we do. All right, then. I'm going to give us a 50-50 odd that we can get this that we can get this through this time. And the reason I say that is it's a very short. We've already had this sort of one-week extension to keep the government up and running. I think that Congress needs to start looking like the good guys, and everybody's hoping that after today we get a little bit more clarity on what's going to happen in January. I would have to say I think that the scale might tip that they'll get that done.
Orion was mentioning that the Dow is just up 30-something. We're a little over – well, now, yeah, we're just over 30,000, but the Nasdaq's been having another good day, too. This news about the vaccine is lifting all of the boats.
It is. You know, Nasdaq came down a bit over the last couple of weeks, and so it's right now around 12,400 and change. It was really close to 13,000 and then over 13. So it's down a bit, and I'm glad it's coming back, but I think it's in response to a couple of things. One of the things that we're going to be seeing shortly is Tesla being added to the Dow 30, and that's going to have a really positive impact. First of all, if you're invested in an S&P 500 account, Tesla will now be get a boost because they're already in the top 500 companies, but as part of the Dow 30, they're going to get sort of an extra special boost, and many, many more people will be invested in Tesla. So there's some movement there, I think, and there's some movement, again, as we distribute the vaccines for some of these startups that are listed on NASDAQ and companies that are trading on NASDAQ rather than the Dow.
They are tracking the voting in the Electoral College 125-56. Joe Biden technically is leading in the election as we speak, 125-56. I see some interesting numbers about equity in people's homes these days. Elise, let's pick it up here in just a minute. We're talking to Elise Glink. Visit thinkglink.com to connect with our real estate and financial wellness expert. Let's talk a little bit about the value of homes. We know they've been going up, but I guess equity, is it a very high level technically right now, right?
It is. I mean, it's not like you can take that cash to the bank unless you get a home equity loan, but it is really, the housing market has been one of the great silver linings of 2020 when we look back at what has been a very, very tough year. But if you own a home, and there are a lot of people who do, it has given you an additional, not individually, but collectively, trillions of dollars in equity. So if you look from September of 2019 through September of 2020, homeowners with mortgages gained about $1 trillion in home equity, according to CoreLogic. That's worth about $17,000 per house, again, on average. And it's the highest one-year increase in 6 years, which is kind of remarkable anyway because homes have been increasing at a crazy rate for about the last 6 or 7 years.
I guess with any of those numbers, though, it depends on your neighborhood, right? Some people are moving out of some areas and into other areas, so for some it might be 5%, and for others it might be 25%, and the difference is about 15 or 17%.
That's right. I mean, in states like California, Massachusetts, Idaho, particularly Boise, wow, it's been on fire for any of those listeners who have a second home in Boise. Huh. Arizona, huge gains there. Metro area of Chicago, we're near the bottom, but we have been increasing, and I think this year we're on track to see a sort of an average increase of about 4 to 5% here in Chicago.
Do you ever look at those magazine postings? Like, I think it's the Sunday edition of the New York Times Magazine. Will always have how different places in the country and what 200,000 or 1.2 million will get you. And if it's, you know, Boise, Idaho, or Peoria, Illinois, or wherever it is, the dollar sure goes far, you know, compared to what it's like in Chicago and the suburbs.
I actually used to write many of those stories for Money Watch, which is part of CBS News. And it is interesting to watch how things change over time. So, 20 years ago, Lake Forest was, on a relative basis, outrageously expensive. And today, prices in Lake Forest have come down quite a bit. And so it's making it not completely affordable, but much more affordable on a relative basis than it has been. Whereas we're looking at pockets, new neighborhoods in Chicago, where new condos have really skyrocketed in value. And I'm thinking in particular right now of sort of the West Loop area, kind of west of the highway, all the way out now to where the Bulls play. And when you think about where that neighborhood was 30 years ago, there was literally nothing there. And then Oprah moved in, and suddenly it building began. And so that whole area really was vacant of residential real estate, and today it's one of the hottest neighborhoods in the city.
And I just wonder if the fact that the vaccine is rolling out today, if some of this is not yet going to change again. That is, Chicago won't be such a bad place to live, that some of the neighborhoods that people are fleeing maybe won't be such and I'm talking about nice neighborhoods maybe, but just some of the areas where people are saying, I'm going to get out of my condo in the city and I'm going to go to the suburbs or the exurbs where I have more land, more property, and I can work from home. But, you know, if the vaccine is as effective as it seems, maybe the world is going to, a year from now, be like it was in 2019. And some of those other properties will recover some of the value. Recover is not the right word, at least, but you know, they won't be the losers in this thing right now.
Well, I think what we're going to see, John, is pent-up demand for all levels of housing. So if you were a renter and you had to move home with your parents, you're going to be looking for a new place to rent or maybe even to buy because interest rates are going to be low. And they're going to stay low for the next few years. So there's opportunities for people to refinance and save money that way. The Mortgage Bankers Association estimates about 20 million Americans could refinance today at these insanely low rates. It's now about 2.7% for a 30-year fixed-rate loan, almost 10 percentage points lower than when I bought my first house time ago.
Yep, ditto.
But there's opportunities there for people to go in and save money. And that also means that people who are earlier in their careers, the younger millennials and the old edge of the Gen Zs who are just now coming into the marketplace, they're just getting jobs, there's opportunities for them to buy, let's say, that one-bedroom or two-bedroom condo as those people are moving out to the suburbs with their kids and trying to take advantage of some of our really fantastic schools that we have in the metro Chicago area. And so I think the pent-up demand is going to be unleashed even further once we get COVID completely under control, and I'm looking forward to it.
Continue to watch the Electoral College as the votes come in across the country. It's now 135-97. 135-97, Joe Biden is leading Donald Trump in the electoral count today. Technically, they don't get revealed or counted until after the first of the year, but it's a public business. We just talked to one of the electors in Illinois. He said all 20 votes went to Joe Biden, so presumably those are the numbers they're counting, which we are seeing. I think you make a very interesting point, Elise, about the renters. I just anecdotally, off the top of my head, I can think of three people I know who are young adults living with their families and will very soon not be living with their families, will soon be going back out and will be looking for a place to live, either buying a condo or renting another place. I would imagine that will lift prices even more.
I think so. And it'll certainly stabilize this movement that we've seen this year from condos out to the suburbs for people who wanted more space for their kids or their dogs, and has left, you know, and there's transactions going on in the city, don't get me wrong. I just think we're going to see another generation that's coming here. I think we also want to see what happens with the office market. So part of the problem that we're seeing in other cities across the country, and in New York in particular, there were some articles about this, is that people aren't going back to work in their offices. And so the businesses around the office centers of New York City are suffering. And we're seeing this happen in London. It's happening in San Francisco and some other areas. And people just have been working from home. And so will companies allow people to continue working from home? They probably will for most of next year. Google just announced that now their people won't come back until maybe September or October of next year. So what's going to happen to those big office buildings if workforces, by and large, don't come back? And we now have empty office buildings that need to be converted into condos, one idea. Or will people come back? And then the condos that are around downtown Chicago, right, in the Loop, we've got lots of interesting buildings now in River North and the West Loop, as I've said earlier, the South Loop. So will people then move there so they can get back to walking to work, walking to theater, walking to their favorite restaurants, enjoying our beautiful lakefront? You know, what will be the way that it goes? And I think we won't know that until the first half of the year settles down, people start to get their vaccines, and we see how comfortable everybody is in getting back to their lives.
Are you surprised to see mortgage rates stay where they are?
I'm not. I just want to warn everybody that in my mind, as somebody who has been reporting on this for many, many years, when you have ultra-low interest rates like we do now, like we've had for the last 10 years, it doesn't mean the economy is healthy. It means that the Fed has taken back and is buying down that interest rate in order to prop up the economic activity. And there could be some negative consequences to that, but we're not at a place where the Fed feels comfortable enough to even pull back. And even the hint of pulling back would send the market into a tailspin right now. So they've made it very clear that at least until 2022, we're going to see these ultra-low interest rates as they try to help the economy get back to where it was last year at the end of the year and things were really booming. But again, even then, the interest rates were super low and the Fed was still buying a lot of, you know, taking back a lot of debt. And so we'll have to see how we can unwind that as we go forward. But in the meantime, if you can refinance, you might want to look into it.
Elise, are there people out there, though, that would trade a higher interest rate, say, to borrow for higher savings rates? I wonder how many people are, you know, sorry, they don't want to be in the market right now, or they don't want to be as much in the market as they are in, but where do you put your money?
Yeah, negative interest rates are not very helpful to long-term savers or to people who are elderly and on a fixed income of some sort. It's just not helpful at all. And that means you eat into your principal a lot faster, and that's what we've seen for anybody who said, no, I'm just going the bond route, or no, I'm just going to keep it in cash. You've seen real eating away, I'm sure, at your principal, and I feel for you because that wasn't the bargain anybody understood, you know, 30 years ago when those plans were put into place. So, I think some people would make that trade, but unfortunately none of us are in the position to actually do anything about that. For those people who have kept a balanced portfolio where you've got a whole bunch in equities and you've got less in bonds, but maybe still some, and even less in cash, you've probably done the best because you've actually allowed your big equity portion, right, the stock portion, to float up with the market. And you're probably okay about that right now.
It's kind of boring, but that's what they say, and it's bearing fruit now. But there was a time where just your $1,000 in a passbook savings account or in a CD would get you 3 or 4%, and that wasn't a lot, but you weren't losing, and that was a fair return. So, I mean, sometimes it was more than that. And
I remember when it was like 10 to 15%. I mean, you want to go back into the early 80s, and you were earning, 10% on your money, 15% on your money just in bonds. I mean, that was wonderful if you could lock it in. We haven't seen those numbers in many years, like 25 years. But what we are seeing is, very, very low interest rates, and negative interest rates crop up more and more around the world. And that's a real concern for the Federal Reserves. We also are going to look this year, coming up in 2021, to seeing what happens with cryptocurrency, Bitcoin and Coinbase. And there are now, I think, probably 50 different versions of this digital currency. And the Federal Reserve is taking a hard look at it. They've put it on the docket for next year, and they're trying to figure out how the world's currencies, all of them, the paper currencies, let's call them, mm-hmm. how they start to work with digital currencies, and how do you put rules in place that protect everybody, not just the, people making those big investments around the world.
Well, that sort of fell off our radar, but everybody was all Bitcoin for a while, and now it's more traditional economics and investments and products that we've been talking about. One last note here. One of our listeners said, is there a concern about a bubble? I'm not exactly sure what Allison is referring to there. I guess one of the bubbles I see coming is a student debt bubble, but we thought about the housing bubble last time. In general, what's your response to that?
I don't think the housing bubble is real. I don't think we're going to have a problem with housing like we did 12 years ago, mostly because the demand is huge and the supply is minimal, and interest rates are going to stay low. So you're good with housing. The stock market, another issue. I think it's trading at very high levels for a very few number of companies, and we'll have to wait and see to 2021 how much what the Fed does affects that.
You can check out Elise Glink's thoughts and wisdom at thinkglink.com. She's the real estate and financial wellness expert. Her book is 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. Thanks, Elise. We'll visit next week.
Sounds good, John.
Jim Dahlke is a senior editor at Chicago Inno. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. How's it going? Great to be here.
Yeah, likewise. Good to be here, and it's going well. Serena Williams' name is in Chicago News on your site. How come?
That's right. Well, Serena Williams, the tennis superstar, actually is a startup investor herself and recently backed a Chicago startup. So just last week announced that her fund is invested in Shopping Gives, which is a Chicago startup that helps you donate to charities while you're shopping online. Shopping Gives was founded a couple years ago and created a kind of simple and sort of really smart way for online shoppers to donate to nonprofits when they purchase items from their retailer. So it basically integrates directly into a retailer's website, so allowing you to kind of shop as you normally would. And then when you are at the checkout screen, you can select a charity that you care about and a cause you're passionate about, and the donation is actually paid by the retailer itself during for each purchase. So really interesting Chicago startup. They work with about 1,400 brands and say that they've given to over 6,000 different nonprofits, and really was a company that aligned with Serena Williams' values, supposedly. And Serena Ventures, her VC fund, has backed several dozen startups and counts now Chicago Startup Shopping Gives.
I'm a little confused. How is it that the retailer is making the donation? I'm not, as the shopper?
That's right. So the donation itself is kind of coming through the retailer itself, kind of as a piece of philanthropy, from kind of giving to nonprofits as the retailer would do. And, you know, actually what this product does is it mimics a feature that Amazon has as well called Amazon Wish. So really kind of allowing sort of independent retailers to kind of have a very similar kind of nonprofit giving checkout function as Amazon does, just another tool in the tool belt to kind of keep up with Amazon.
One last thing, because I've been doing some online shopping, I haven't seen this feature. So evidently not all retail establishments online have it, but it must appear at checkout and you can click on them?
That's right. So the select retailers that they work with, so they work with brands like Kenneth Cole and White & Warren. And so, yeah, it definitely depends on the specific retailer's website that you're on. But, yeah, it's kind of a retailer-by-retailer basis.
Speaking of local startups, Local Gag Gift hits Shark Tank. Why don't you take it from there, sir?
Sure. So this is a local company actually based in downstate Normal, and they have created a device that they call the Toilet Timer. And, you know, John, we write about startups all the time that are creating innovative solutions for challenging problems. Well, in the Steffi household, that meant finding a way for husband Adam to spend less time in the bathroom. Adam and his wife Katie appeared on Shark Tank earlier this month for their Toilet Timer device, which has definitely been a bit of a gag gift that has taken off on Amazon in recent years. They did about $300,000 in sales in 2019, really thanks in large part to Amazon users sort of searching, you know, funny stocking stuffers for dad, populating for a lot of those users, and sales just took off. They're going to do about $1 million in sales, believe it or not, for the Toilet Timer, and they were on Shark Tank just the other week and got a investment from Mark Cuban. So Cuban is now an investor in the Toilet Timer and this downstate Normal, Illinois company as they look to kind of continue to grow this product and get it into more stockings this year.
This is so beneath the dignity of the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is shocking.
You would be surprised, you know, obviously how many people are into something like this. And I was talking to the founders, and it's, you know, it's probably not surprising that, you know, founder Katie, the wife, and the husband and wife duo has, told me that it's typically a gift that the gift giver appreciates giving more than the recipient appreciates receiving.
Yeah. I can see that as a, what do they call it? The Yankee swap, or where you sometimes have gag gifts and nobody wants to get it. But I can see that as a, what's that thing cost? I sound like I want to buy one now. I don't, but what does that thing cost?
That's a good question. I have to pull it up. So I'm not exactly sure. I think it's probably pretty relatively expensive is my guess. They learned to create it basically from 3D printing. Adam got into some 3D printing down in Normal, kind of learned to tinker around with products, and it's one of the first products in their portfolio. They actually create a retro video game cleaning machine. So I don't know if you've ever played an old Nintendo where you've had to blow into the cartridge to clean it off and get the game working correctly, but they've created a device to clean those as well. So kind of an entrepreneur working on a couple of different products, and the Toilet Timer being the one that has really taken off.
Pete just looked it up, $15. That's the perfect sort of a swap gift price. Talk about Chicago and how it's doing for startups. It's still a very hot place for money to be invested, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, just last week a new report came out that the city was really promoting, a report from venture capital database PitchBook that found that Chicago, again, leads the country as the best city for venture capital investor returns. This was a designation that the city actually first earned back in 2016, and, you know, for one way or another, has kind of held on to in the years since, and has, you know, in some ways become kind of a rallying cry among local tech boosters and investors and other folks in the city's startup scene that kind of points to Chicago's growth as a tech scene. And really what it's looking at is a metric called median multiple on invested capital, which is kind of a clunky way of just saying return on investment. So Chicago startups provide a better return for investors than other cities when you look at the rest of the country. So really, you know, Chicago kind of proving its value in terms of being a place where investors can get a good bang for their buck.
One more story to comment on. Tempus. Tell me about Tempus.
Yeah, so speaking of startup funding, Tempest, now Chicago's most valuable startup for several years now, just last week raised a $200 million round. Tempest is a startup that set out to kind of work in the cancer treatment space using machine learning and genomic sequencing to tailor cancer treatments to patients. So doing a big data approach, seeing what cancer treatments have worked in the past and helping physicians tailor treatments to people who have cancer currently. And they raised another $200 million. They've raised over $1 billion to date, an $8 billion valuation. And this is the startup from former Groupon co-founder Eric Lakofsky. Really, really fast-growing business here in Chicago, and COVID has really kind of positioned them to pivot, did a big pivot now into infectious disease, kind of its next biggest move outside of cancer care. So a big, big round of funding. Google was in the most recent funding round for Tempest here. So Google, part of that $200 million round, as Tempest kind of grows beyond cancer into infectious disease and some other areas of care.
Quite a range of topics today, quite a range of innovation in Chicago. Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, chicagoinno.com. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, John.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Amy.
Hi, John. How's it going today? Happy Monday.
Yeah, likewise. So let's talk about Google. Speaking of things being a little down today, what happened?
Yeah, that's right. There was a massive outage earlier that included YouTube, Gmail, and Google Classroom. So people that work off of Google Docs, people that are learning online, if they are early birds, they might have been impacted by this. Most things were back up and running a little after 8 a.m. Eastern, but for early birds, they may have noticed that, this outage that pretty much, if you're a Google user, you know, it's all intertwined and it's kind of on everything. I know everything in my life works on Google Docs. So, you know, I did not notice this myself, but saw a lot of people tweeting about it. Google said, you know, they apologized for the inconvenience and they didn't have any indication that it was a hack or anything like that. Just a simple server outage and that everything's back up and running. That said, they said there were a few users that were still having some, you know, some lag time. But, you know, that's a big deal. Google has so many things tied to it and people use their Google login for so many things that an outage there can really send a lot of ripples around the business world, the educational world, and just kind of be very disruptive to people's lives.
Yeah. I was thinking about that when I was thinking about signing my parents up for Eric Zorn and Mary Schmeek's Songs of Good Cheer Christmas concert. And I thought there's just so much demand, shopping, so much demand, searching, so much demand, buying tickets or streaming things online. I wonder how the infrastructure of the internet is holding up these days. I don't know that it was the demand that shut them down today, but you kind of hope that everything can just hang on, not only through Christmas, but maybe somehow through the delivery of the vaccine too.
Yeah, certainly. And I know a lot of e-commerce operators have had that same thought as you, and have really kind of fingers crossed, hoping that everything, you know, all of the infrastructure that we're relying on right now can really hold up and the internet bandwidth can hold up. You know, I know when a lot of people first started working from home, everybody was complaining because they were like, hey, my home internet is actually really bad and I never noticed it. Yeah. Because everybody, you know, and their neighbors were online and doing their work and on Zoom videos and things like that. So I think 2021 has been one test after another of infrastructure, but, you know, I think a lot of people in the holiday shopping time are really, really keeping a careful eye on how that infrastructure is holding up online.
I've never heard of DubSmash. That's in the news today.
Yeah, DubSmash is pretty fun. It's kind of a lot like TikTok. It'll take some audio from a famous movie or TV show, you know, some of those really iconic lines, and it'll show you a little waveform so you can record yourself as if you're saying it, kind of lip syncing over it. And that's a lot of what TikTok does now. So DubSmash is a few years old and it's been around for a bit. And it's kind of never really caught on fire really big. And then suddenly here comes TikTok, and it does catch on fire. So Reddit has bought DubSmash, hoping to be a little bit more competitive with TikTok. We've all seen those, you know, videos of people we know lip-syncing to a song or saying a movie line or something, and it's very funny, and they get shared very widely. So the idea that that would have some a little more competition now will be interesting. Not necessarily, you know, huge business news in terms of what people do with that, although some brands have done some really creative stuff on TikTok. So to add another layer of competition there might be really interesting to see just in the tech space what the two brands do in terms of DubSmash versus TikTok.
Made a little chart for myself. Facebook, then I had to learn Twitter, then I had to learn
right.
Snapchat, then I had to learn TikTok. Now I've got to learn DubSmash. United is holding out hope for summer travel. What are the forecasters saying?
Yeah, they are. I think a lot of the big carriers, but of course I keep an eye on United because it's based here in Chicago. United's saying they are expecting a little bit of a boost in coming up in the summer of 2021. It's still going to be a lot lower. It'll be about 40% below pre-pandemic levels. But the summer is such a big travel time, and they really, really, all the carriers are really hoping that they're going to be able to recoup some revenue during that time because they've lost so much. But all the carriers are saying, hey, we do have this optimism ahead, especially now the vaccine is starting to roll out. However, the time between now and that summer peak travel time in 2021, they are really bracing themselves for some low times. They have seen a little bit of an uptick in the summer, but as COVID case numbers started to go back up and as some stay-home orders started to resurface in various parts of the world, we saw those numbers go right back down, and I don't know that's what they were necessarily counting on. United said it would go through about 24 to 26 million in cash every single day during this kind of interim period, which is just such a huge amount of money. And that including on top of that is 10 million in debt payments and severance costs. So it's just really, again, highlighting the struggle of the airline industry to go through just such a high volume of cash every day. Just to even have planes parked is so very, very expensive. Delta had warned last week of something similar, saying that they were going through more cash than they expected this quarter because bookings had dropped even more than an already pretty pessimistic forecast for just here in the last part of the year. And American Airlines had come out towards the end of last week also saying, you know, our cash that we're going to be going through, that cash consumption, that churn of it is going to be a little bit at the higher end of the range that we predicted. And Gary Kelly, who's the CEO of Southwest Airlines, recently said, last week, he said that they were also bracing for what he described as really rough months in that first part of 2021. So I think, you know, it's just a continuation of so much that has befallen the airline industry, really, they have taken such a hit through travel, decline in travel, and as COVID case numbers have moved around.
Yeah.
And they're really just trying to, you know, stay afloat. You and I have talked about some huge volumes of furloughs and layoffs they did. But they're still really grappling with high costs and trying to keep going. So I think for them it's just kind of a matter of, okay, nobody do anything. Let's just get to the summer and try to get through that burn of cash in the meantime.
We're also transfixed on the delivery today of the vaccine. We've got news about that coming up next. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks, John.